Thanks for tuning in to today's Horsewoman podcast. Our show explores women in the horse industry as they share their dreams, challenges, successes. What drives these women? Well, let's find out. Hi, my name is Rose Cushing, and I am the host of today's Horsewoman podcast. My guest today is Catherine Rizzo. And Catherine is a very interesting equestrian woman. She does course design as well as teach lessons and trains horses and edits a magazine. So, you know, we have so much to talk about this morning. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about you before we get into all of the jobs you do.
Yeah, I guess I've been riding since I was like 9 or 10 years old. Me and my sister, Margaret McKelvey, we both ride and kind of grew up riding together. And then after college and grad school, I decided to open my own little farm. So I have like a small training facility. And I do a lot with kids and pony club and local events and that sort of thing.
That's really, really cool. Now, I'm curious about course design because I don't think I've ever interviewed a person that did course design. So tell me what and all's involved and what kind of courses you do.
Yeah, so through the USEF, there are a couple of different course design licenses that people can apply for and then test for and such. The one that I am currently certified at is for eventing, the sport of eventing. So it is a cross-country course designer and a show jump course designer for eventing. Right now, I'm licensed through the training level, and I'm currently working on the licensing process to get certified through the intermediate and three-star level. So there's different kind of steps along the way, depending if you want to be a local course designer or an FEI designer or even an international designer. But specifically, what I'm doing is for eventing versus show jumpers.
Okay. Now, to do a cross-country course, I don't know much about eventing, but I'm assuming that you would do it based on whatever level that the contest is for that day.
Yeah. So we will definitely plan several months, sometimes even a year ahead of time, what the courses are going to look like. And it starts with the organizer, like the host facility, in what they want to offer. Like there's one coming up actually this month in August that I'm doing over at Waradaka. And I'm doing training in below, and there's a different course designer doing preliminary and above. Or modified and above, excuse me. And so we all kind of work together with the course designer, or with the organizer, to figure out what levels are going to be offered and then where we want to put the courses. And each level has different rules and regulations that USEF puts on those levels, so we have to make sure whatever course we design is within those rules. And there's also regulations and things about what the fences actually look like, what they're built out of. So we work really closely with a course builder also.
Right.
Some course designers are also licensed course builders. You definitely need to have more of a construction background to do that part of it. So it ends up being a big team effort to get these courses, you know, designed and flagged and ready for the competitors.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, what is your favorite course to design?
I definitely really enjoy the lowest levels, which I've had people ask, well, then why are you going for an upper level certification? And I think for me personally, it's also an educational tool. The more I learn about course design and the more courses I personally design, the better of an instructor I feel I become for my kids and my students. Because if you know why a fence was put somewhere, it's actually easier to jump. So I do really like introducing people to the sport through, you know, the lower level courses and giving them, you know, whether they're new to the sport or their horse is new to the sport, you know, giving them a very positive experience since cross country is what makes eventing, you know?
Yeah. Almost everybody that I've ever interviewed that did eventing, cross country was their favorite part of it, without a doubt.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, it's why people event. I mean, it definitely is what makes the sport the sport.
So how long is a cross country course usually? How long does it take a person to do the course?
Yeah, it definitely depends on the level. Most of the, and it also depends on if it's a horse trials versus a 3-day event.
Uh-huh.
So at the horse trials level, you know, most of the lower level courses are going to be about five minutes or so, give or take a minute. When you get to more of the FEI levels and the CCIs and the 5-stars and that kind of stuff, those courses can be, you know, 10 minutes or even more. But you're never going to see any course that's going to be longer. I think the longest course I watched was just under 12 minutes.
Uh-huh.
But most of the time you're looking at anywhere from like 3.5 to like 6 minutes.
Okay. That's such a fun thing to watch. And I remember once I interviewed Will Fodry for the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that when he got to Kentucky to his first big show, that he walked the course and he's thinking the whole time, you're kidding, right? This is not really the course we have to do. But it was.
I mean, it can definitely be intimidating. And I do think that, like, our job as course designers, it's not that we're trying to make a course difficult or make a course hard, mm-hmm. you know, or easy. I mean, we are trying to make courses that are fair and educational. You know, we want, or let's say a good course designer wants the horses and riders to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, so yes, the fences might look really intimidating, but as a rider, like, if you approach them from a little bit more of a logical way of, like, you know, why is this jump where it is? And, okay, this is an angled line, but, like, do I need to come in from a steep angle or a not steep angle? And those kind of things can actually set you up for success if you think about it a little bit more from a design standpoint. And then I find, as a rider, I do find it less intimidating once I kind of look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, that makes good sense. And I would think you walk a very fine line between making them something people can do, but also challenging.
Yeah, for sure. And we definitely have to think about that, too, because, you know, you want it to be, I keep going back to the word educational, but, like, you do want it to be an educational experience for the horse and the rider. So within the guidelines and rules for whatever level you're doing, you want to expose those horses and riders to every possible thing that they can do at that level,
uh-huh.
Without making it so hard that they can't achieve it. You know, if you take the very lowest level of the sport as an example, beginner novice, you know, technically at beginner novice, you can have a water crossing, you can have an open ditch, you can have a bank, like a step up sort of question. But you would never want to put those all together because that's the beginning of the sport, you know?
Right.
Those horses and riders aren't ready to do a bank out of the water.
Right.
They need to just go through the water and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm sure that it's quite beneficial to be an eventer and love the cross country to participate, because it does give you really good insight into knowledge about how to design it and how to think about it from that perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why I ended up getting into being a course designer is, you know, I was a rider first.
Yeah.
And I grew up at Wauradaka in Maryland, and Robert Butts, who's one of the owners, he's a course designer himself, and I remember volunteering at a horse trials. You know, I had ridden in it the day before, volunteered the next day, and I was sitting in a truck with him watching a couple fences, and I just asked, like, you know, why are the people having such trouble with this line? And then he explained the terrain and how, you know, riders were coming in at wrong angle, and then you could see when the rider did it correctly that it actually was an easier question than it was turning out to be, and that just really fascinated me. So being able to ride and design, I do think they go really nicely together.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to think about how much that a three-day eventing course, cross-country course, is really a strategy. And, you know, and you do have to plan how you're going to attack it. And and I had never thought about it in that way, because I know that, you know, it's pretty much based on speed and accuracy, but I hadn't thought about the angles and the way that you approach the jumps and you know, rating your horse's speed and all those different things.
Yeah, and it also depends on the horse you're on. The first time I had moved up to the training level, I had actually leased a horse that was at this time we call it a three-star. So he was a very experienced horse that I got to lease to learn from. And most of my rides on him cross-country were literally point him at the jump and let him do his job.
Right.
And then at the same time, I was training one of my own horses that I had gotten straight off the track. And so as he moved up the levels, you know, the three-star horse was kind of a very compact, very nimble horse. But my horse, Jack, he was 17-2, long legs, and just this big, massive horse. And one of the things I learned about him was, you know, especially when I got him up to training and started the school preliminary, is that, you know, the lines that might be a bending line for, you know, a 15 or 16 hand horse, he couldn't fit the disc, you know, he couldn't fit that extra stride in because of his size.
Yeah.
So sometimes I would go in and angle a jump that other people were bending. And it's what he needed, you know, and being able to adjust the way you ride based on your horse, I think, is also super important.
Absolutely. Do you have a particular breed of horse that you like best to do this with?
You know, what's really funny is if you had asked me that question a year ago, I would have said thoroughbred 100% all the way. I pretty much have only ever owned thoroughbreds, and most of them, all but one, I started straight off the track myself, and I just love that partnership, and I think they are super athletes. My most recent horse I have right now is a Dutch harness horse, completely opposite of a thoroughbred.
Yeah.
In every manner. I mean, and it took me, the first year I had him, I only did dressages with him. I jumped in lessons, and I only competed him in dressage because it was a learning curve to figure out how to ride a warm blood that, you know, moved in a completely different manner. And now I'm like, I really like it. Like there's things that he can do that the thoroughbred couldn't. I think my heart is always going to be in those off-the-track thoroughbreds, but this Dutch horse is definitely opening my eyes to other breeds out there, and he's cool. He's just a fun, cool ride.
Very nice. They're beautiful animals, without a doubt, and the way they move is just incredible.
Oh, yeah. But, like, you have to learn how to ride that movement.
Which, yeah.
You know, like, it's kind of one of those challenges that I didn't realize I would have at this point in my life, and I'm super enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really cool. Most people say thoroughbred, so that's what I was expecting your answer to be, so I'm glad you kind of walked on the wild side a little.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, you give me a nice thoroughbred, and I will ride it all day long, too. So.
Sure.
I don't think I've given up on them, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about your lessons and your training program.
I started teaching lessons when I was in college, and then I was the head coach of the dressage team out at UC Santa Cruz while I was in grad school over there.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of did it as just a side initially, you know. I really enjoyed teaching and working with people, and it was mostly adults, college kids and adults, for while I was in school. And then somehow, as I got back east, I got hooked up with the local pony clubs and realized I really liked the pony club model. I love the horsemanship that they teach. It's not just about, you know, getting on and going and winning ribbons. It's about taking care of your horses and taking care of your barn and that sort of thing. So I've been doing that primarily now for the last probably like 12 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the center administrator of the Word Doc Pony Club, and I'm also a regional supervisor or vice regional supervisor of the Maryland region. And it's all about those kids and like making great experiences for them. And I definitely really enjoy that.
Yeah.
And then I also have a training program, a very, very small training program at my farm. I definitely don't have the time to make it as big as it could be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So typically there's, you know, my horses plus maybe three or four other clients. And sometimes those are sales horses that, you know, they're sent to me to train to resell. Some of them are client horses that a lot of my clients in the last couple of years have bought some really young horses, so they've put them in training with me to get them going, you know, while they also ride them, and then we slowly transition it to them being the primary riders and me just the teacher.
Right.
It's great. I mean, I just really like seeing, you know, that partnership develop with other horses and their riders.
I can see where that would be very fulfilling. And, you know, I love Pony Club. I'm not an English rider, but I've worked a lot with 4-H, but we have Pony Club in the area, too. And like you say, I mean, they're just the best all the way around, and they're so good at what they do. All these clubs, they give the kids a good opportunity to learn some responsibility and, you know, and have a relationship with the horse and how important that is to put him first.
Yeah, definitely. And the program that we run at Waradaka, we're one of the few U.S. Pony Club riding centers in Maryland.
Uh-huh.
And a riding center, they provide horses for their members. You don't actually have to own your own horse to participate. So a lot of the kids that I'm working with, if we didn't have the program, like, they wouldn't have these opportunities. Like,
yeah.
they just have situations where they can't own their own horse. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, my sister and I, we didn't own horses. Our parents were insanely supportive of all of our riding, but they definitely said no horses. No ownering horses.
Sure.
You know, but they leased us horses and they gave us as many lessons as we wanted and, you know, supported in that way. But this program allows, you know, those families that just for whatever reason can't do the horse ownership, it gives those kids an opportunity to participate and as if they had their own horse, which is, you know, I think a bit unique. And there's a couple of those centers here in Maryland.
That is really, really good because, you know, when you have kids, you never know if they're going to want to stick with it, and you hate to run out and buy a horse right off the bat. So that's a great way for them to ease into it and see if it's going to be a good fit long term.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, my parents definitely, they joke about how they didn't realize what, you know, signing the two of us up for one lesson a week needs to. They're both engineers from New York City, so it was definitely a big change for them. But, you know, they've been so involved with our lives and still are big cheerleaders and stuff. But I think they were both a little surprised that, you know, this opened such a different door than they were kind of expecting.
I know they must be insanely proud of both of you. You both are amazing women.
Thank you very much.
Now, you are an editor for a horse magazine as well, so let's talk about that a minute.
Yeah, the Equerry Magazine, we are a regional publication for the state of Maryland. It's owned by the Maryland Horse Council, which is a nonprofit group. Mainly, they lobby and legislate or lobby for horse stuff in terms of like open space and regulations and things within the state, and were their publications.
Uh-huh.
And I started with them actually as the eventing columnist, you know, and just writing the eventing column once a month, and then slowly went to assistant editor to editor, etc. And now I do a lot of the writing and the editing, and I'm also the art director, so I lay out the magazine. We're a very small group of three employees and a bunch of volunteers. But we're really proud of it, and it's definitely well regarded within the state and the local areas and such.
Is it a print and an online both, or just online?
Yep, Yep, no, we're print and online, monthly printed, and then online we have, you know, our website that we do updates and other stories on that might be online only stories.
Yeah.
And then also social, you know, we have Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff that we'll post things on as well.
That's really, really nice. I miss doing my magazine. It was so much fun.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because as different parts of my life have changed, you know, over the years, I got to say the Equerry has been the one very consistent thing in it. And, you know, especially during COVID when a lot of print publications had to switch to digital only and,
yeah,
and things like that, you know, we have a very loyal support in this state, and we were able to keep going, and we're, you know, moving on and trucking going forward, and it's a good group of people to work with.
That is so awesome.
Hey y'all, this is Lonnie from Mule City Specialty Feeds located in Benson, North Carolina. It's almost springtime. Is your horse blooming? Does your horse have a shiny coat and healthy hooves? How much extra time and money are you spending mixing supplements in the feed room when you could be enjoying your horse in the arena or out on the trail? Then look no further. Mule City Specialty Feeds has a line of equine feeds that delivers maximum nutrition. From your performance horse to your weekend trail horse, our line of maximum nutrition equine feeds offers 5 different complete balanced formulas that will take you out of the feed room and into the saddle. In addition to equine feeds, we also offer complete feeds for your barnyard pets and livestock. For more details, visit our website at mulecity.com, follow us on Facebook, or give us a call at 1-800-587-9229. And don't forget, Mule City delivers.
So how can people follow you and the Equerry Magazine?
Yeah, so the Equerry Magazine, you know, online is equerry.com, and the social is, you know, the Equerry for Facebook and Instagram and such. Me personally, I'm actually not on Facebook and never have been.
Not a bad thing.
You limit yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'm on Instagram. It's KORizzoPix on Instagram, or you can send me an email, and it's just KORizzo@smcm.edu, which is my college, St. Mary's.
Okay.
College account. So that's the best way to reach me. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to chat with people who want to know more about course design or eventing or publishing or whatever it is. I mean, there's so many opportunities in the horse world for people, and you don't even have to be a rider. Like,
absolutely.
So many things you can do.
I know. I did an article once in our magazine on equestrian careers, and I believe there was 375 different careers,
wow,
in the equestrian world that you could do, you know. So there was a lot of opportunity here in this world.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's what's so great about, you know, the industry is, I mean, like I said, you don't even have to be a rider. There's,
yeah,
so many ways to participate.
So many facets to it. Now, I have one last question that I ask everybody. The horse industry, you know, is a tough place to make a living, without a doubt. So what kind of advice would you give to women entering our industry as to how to make it and leave their mark on the world?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing would be to trust your instincts and trust your gut. I do think that, you know, we as women have a lot of insight. And a lot of times we doubt ourselves, you know, especially based on what other people might be telling us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you can just really listen to yourself and listen to what you know, you can push through a lot of barriers and do well.
I think that's a really, really good piece of advice. Trust in yourself is always the best thing.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean,
yeah,
we've all been there where we're,
yeah,
just like, oh, are we sure about that?
Uh-huh.
But if you can really just listen to your own head, I mean, I think 99.9% of the time, we know what's best for us, and we know how to get through to the next best and that sort of thing.
Sure. And if you need to, you know, change your plan up a little bit, that's okay, too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, for sure.
I've reinvented myself probably 50 times in my life.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally, like, sometimes I look at, you know, I went to school for biology and environmental studies and then ended up here. And sometimes I wonder how that happened.
Yeah, my son teases me all the time and says, you know, Mom, you still haven't decided what you're going to be when you grow up, have you? I said, no.
Right.
There's no telling, honey, what tomorrow will bring.
Yeah, and that's great. Be, you know, adapt as you go along.
Yeah.
Follow your passions.
You know, the older you get, the more you need to stretch your wings and try new things. You know, what if you lose? So what? You know, then you can pick another thing.
Sure. Definitely.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you today. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much for having me.
And as always, listeners, thank you for listening. Without you, we couldn't do this, so thank you. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Our souls wander in similar places. Even though we may not know each other, we touch the same wind, we walk under the same sky, and our hearts wander in the same dreams. We are one. Women just like you and me. Thank you for listening.